Dumb Buncher Radio, episode 35. Trey Yannity, Marty Leap with you as always. Today we are joined by another special guest, Brad Case, pitcher in the Pittsburgh Pirates minor league system, a fellow podcaster. Brad, thanks so much for being on with us tonight. How's your holiday season going so far?
What's going on, guys? It's been going fantastic so far. Just got home. Excited to hang out with the families, have some good memories, and just have a good year, or finish off an interesting year, and hopefully make next year a little bit better.
Yeah, man, interesting to say the least. This is this has been a different year. Thankfully, now in the final month of it, winter meetings just getting wrapped up this past week. We took a little hiatus from Rumble to Radio. Apologize to everybody. It's been a couple weeks. We're back now, though. Excited to get this episode turned around, as well as a lot of great episodes to come. We got all kinds of articles out right now. A lot going on. Go check it out, rumbunter.com, on the app as well. Brad Case, Brad, again, thanks so much for being on with us tonight. We're going to break down your story, your journey in the game of baseball, talk about where you're at right now, what you plan on this offseason, and what's to come. But let's start by just taking it all the way back. Your beginnings in the game of baseball, how you got started, and when you really began to play the game on a regular basis.
Yeah, for me, I feel like it was just always baseball. There's a lot of guys that grew up playing a bunch of sports. I was one of those guys too, but it was baseball and then everything else for me. Like my earliest memories are me and my dad in my front yard when I was 4 years old, just playing with like a wiffle ball and like doing that stuff. And I was hooked immediately. Like it was never a doubt in my mind that baseball was the thing I was going to love for my entire life.
Yeah, man, I feel like we've heard different guys talk about their experiences. You know, some guys didn't really find a passion for the game until, you know, they were in their 20s even, or late teens, at this level. But you obviously had that from a young age. Talk about some of your coaches growing up and how they helped evolve your game. And, you know, when you started to realize, hey, I'm pretty good at this game, I might be able to continue playing at the next level.
Yeah. Let's see. Geez, I've had a lot of coaches over the years help me out. Probably one of the biggest influences is when I was like 12. We had this coach. One of my best friends is named Vinny Mazzaro, and his dad, Coach Mazzaro, I still call him. Yeah. He was a college pitcher for Iona College, which is a local place by me. And we just had a great team. We had a great great group of friends, and we just like I'm still even close with some of those guys. And it was just it was a lot of fun. It was a blast. And that's like really when I started. Like I said, I was always pretty hooked to baseball, but you know, that summer when I was 10, 11, 12, those were all like some of the best times of my life that I still look back on because it was just so much fun. And that's when I started getting better and better. But I was actually, I was usually the guy that blew the game or lost it for my team when I was 10, 11, 12. Oh, and my friends still give me crap for it to this day. So that's pretty fun.
Oh, man, that's ridiculous. They're giving you, you're a professional baseball player.
Yeah. But I mean, it was a good time. It was a lot of fun. But yeah, so Coach Mazzaro, I definitely owe a lot of credit to. And then as I moved into high school, Coach Caputo was probably one of the biggest influences in my entire life. I'll send this to him for sure, and he'll give it a listen because I owe him a lot of my success because he's one of the greatest guys I've ever been able to know in my life.
Definitely, yeah. I mean, you know, coaches in this game mean so much development-wise and in such a fundamental game. You know, there's so many people I think that get you to that level. Talk about your high school days, though, and how you kind of evolved and, you know, decided that I want to play this game in college and kind of that process.
Yeah, so that's kind of interesting. When I was in high school, like, I showed up freshman year and I went to a private school near me, and they were known for having a better baseball program, and that's specifically why I chose them because I saw my public school, I saw the kids that were there with me in that group, and I was just like, we're going to be terrible. I don't want to deal with this. So I kind of wanted to get out of there, and I go over to Iona Prep, and I get there my freshman year, and it was a pretty intimidating place. Like, it was known for like having dudes, and especially in a place like New York in the Northeast where baseball isn't the premier sport, where our athletes overall just, I feel like we don't compare as well to the rest of the country. It was still pretty intimidating to come to this school and, you know, want to try to be a baseball player here. I remember, you know, in a grade of 200 kids, 50 kids showed up for freshman year tryouts, and I was so nervous. And I'm actually there my first day of tryouts, and I'm playing catch with Jafet Rivera, who's the son of Mariano Rivera.
Oh, man.
Yeah, and we're playing catch and we're throwing, and I'm launching this ball as hard as I can at this kid, hoping that the coaches recognize me. And after about the fourth or fifth throw, or Jafet drives over and goes, "Brad, you can like calm down. I think we're gonna make the team."
Oh.
But yeah, no, I played freshman year, had a great time. Junior or sophomore year on JV, had a good time. And then junior year comes around, and I was like, I'm gonna put it pretty bluntly, I was a liability.
Wow.
I was not that good. I had like a 5 or a 6 ERA. Like, I was the guy that they pitched when it was just like, "All right, well, we need another starter, so Case, get out there." And I didn't play well at all. I had one good game like towards the end of the year in a playoff game. And they pitched me just because they were like, "All right, we're out of pitching, so Case, get out there." And I actually ended up doing well. But I moved into that summer, and it was the recruiting summer, and I was. Jeez, I was nervous, man. I was trying to play college baseball. I thought I had a chance to go somewhere, but then all of a sudden, like that summer, I started throwing a little bit harder, stopped walking as many guys, and started, honing in on some of my strengths and the strike zone overall. And I started getting offers, and I got some D1 offers, and I was like, the first D1 offer I got, I was pumped. And then, at the end of the summer, I ended up having, I think maybe 6 or 7 offers overall, and I was just ecstatic about that. It was, I think it was Canisius College up in Buffalo. It was Hartford over in Connecticut. Barry College, I think that was NAIA in Georgia. Rollins College, the school I ultimately ended up going to. And then St. John's, and as well as actually University of South Alabama, the same school that Travis Swaggerty went to.
Nice.
So there's a lot of times where I think like, "Oh wow, I wonder if what would have happened if I, played with Travis." Now looking back now, but when I was in that moment, and I had all these offers, I really had no idea what to choose. I was 17, 18 years old, and I was pretty nervous. I had a legitimate conversation with myself. I was like, "Do I ever think I'm gonna ever play professional baseball?" And the answer was no. And I was like, "I should just go to the school with the best education." So I chose Rollins because I thought there was actually no chance on the planet that I was ever going to play professional baseball. But here I am now. So.
Yeah, wow, that's awesome, man. Yeah, I feel like a lot of guys you hear, go to maybe D2s or JUCOs, whatever, with the sole purpose of I have to play this game at the next level. That's a different thought process. It's a noble thought process to be thinking about education and everything else. But what was the feeling inside of you as you got to Rollins and made the switch to warm weather? Obviously that helped.
Yeah, that was.
What was the kind of thought once you got there? Like, hey, what's it going to take to continue playing this game? And was that ever the thought? Was it just, I'm going to get to school and do what I can?
Well, actually, so take a little bit of a step back. So, like, I made that decision to go to Rollins, and then I go into my senior year, and I still kind of thought I was going to be that same kid that was okay for my high school. And I get there, and our best pitcher, who was this left-handed pitcher, who ended up, he played at Pitt actually, for a little bit at the college team there. And we get back to school, and he tears his elbow. He has to get TJ.
Oh,
He's out for the year. And I'm like, my coach is kind of looking at me like, "All right, Brad, like you're going to have to kind of be the guy this year." And I was like, "Oh, God." And I ended up going out there having like a sub-2 ERA. Like a 0.7 whip, led the league in strikeouts, all these numbers. I ended up winning MVP for all New York City.
my
So
God.
all that kind of came out of nowhere. And I still like kind of look back at it and couldn't believe that all that happened. But it was one hell of a senior year. And then kind of going into freshman year, I got there with kind of the mindset of like, "Dude, you're in Florida now. Like you're in trouble. Like this is real baseball." So I was kind of prepared to not play at all. And I was, I had a lot of teammates, some of my best friends still to this day, guys from Tennessee and Georgia and Carolinas and Florida. And I felt like they were better than me just because of where they were from. And I think I'd let that hold me back a little bit, or maybe, I don't know, maybe it helped me work harder a little bit too. But ultimately I knew that I had to put in a lot of work to just try to catch up with those guys. And by doing that work, I watched my velo slowly grow, and then I think by the end of my freshman year, I had jumped like 6 miles an hour. I went from throwing 85 to throwing 91,
Wow.
and I couldn't believe the strides that I was making. But, you know, a lot of that, I credit that, a lot of that to guys like Coach McGonigal that I had there my freshman year, who I love to death. We still stay in touch to this day. And then actually my catcher there, who ended up getting drafted by the Giants the year after, Chris Corbett. He so my freshman year, I come in, and I really, like, when I tell you, I really had no expectations of playing. My goal, like, my crazy goal that I wanted to achieve, was like, that'd be so cool if, like, I could be the closer here. Like, that would be great. And one day he asked me, like, what my goals were. I told him, and he goes, no, that's not good enough. I was like, shit, okay. I was like, all right, how about, all right, I want to be a starter. He goes, no, it's not good enough. I was like, all right, I want to be the Friday guy. He goes, there we go. That's a goal you should strive for the entire year. I was like, all right, sounds good. I'll get working on it. I'll try my best to do it. And sure enough, by the end of the year, I wasn't the Friday guy, but I was the game two guy as a freshman, and I could not have been happier about it. So I was pumped that, you know, I was able to make those strides. And like I said, like, I give Chris all that credit, because, you know, without him, I wouldn't have probably had that fire in me. I wouldn't have had that motivation to try to be that pitcher that I ended up becoming.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like you said, there's D2 baseball, D1 baseball, any kind of college baseball in Florida is just no joke. You know, a lot of talent on that roster at Rollins College. Talk about how you grew as a player. You detailed it just a second ago there, but how you grew as a person throughout your time and how it kind of helped you form into a professional baseball player by the end of it at Rollins.
Yeah, I think a big takeaway actually I got my sophomore year was when we got a new pitching coach in Pat Zerba. And when he first got there, the entire time I was there with him, he talked a lot about just having a consistent routine. And the first time I heard it, I was like, sure, whatever. It went in one ear and went out the other. And I didn't really pay much attention to it, but slowly over time, I started realizing more and more, and I understand more and more now. If you ask any of my teammates that I play with now with the Pirates, they will tell you that I keep a black notebook and I keep in that detail every single part of the week, and I detail every part of the routine, and everything is down to an absolute T, where it's almost like I need a timer, like, on the day of my starts, so that I know what's going on. I know, I just, there's a whole plan in place the entire time when I'm out on the mound. And even, you know, leading up to it. But I think that was probably one of the bigger things, that helped me grow into the professional that I am today, just having a routine and being able to stick to it. Because that's having that routine. At first, like I said, I didn't understand it, but then I started realizing it. Like, this routine is what's going to make sure that my body, my mind, and everything is in set, in place, ready to go, so that I'm always in the best possible position to compete, whether it's physically or mentally on the mat.
Yeah, definitely, man. I mean, every pitcher has their own kind of crazy routine. Trevor Bauer, yeah, to throw the spears and, you know, all kinds of crazy stuff. What was that routine like for you? You said you started to form it that sophomore year. Was it, you know, how detailed was it at first, and how has that kind of shifted?
At the very most, it started as simple as, okay, throw a bullpen on Wednesday if I'm pitching on Friday, stuff like that. Like, it was that bare bones. And now it's down to the point where I have a individualized routine for a 5-day. I have an individualized routine for a 6-day, depending if, like, I know we have an off day coming up, if I know the rain's going to happen and cancel out one of our games. So I always know, like, what's on the agenda, what's on the plan. And part of, you know, one of the bad parts about this year is that I wasn't able to, you know, continue on staying on that routine. But, like, there's even in those, I used to say it, I think I have it written down somewhere in my book. It's the 5th day, obviously, when I'm out on the mound, matters a lot. But the 4 days leading up to that start are more important than that 5th day almost, because that in those 4 days is when I'm able to do so much more work and put my body through so much more to get it ready for that 5th day, that I almost have more emphasis on those 4 days than the actual day where I get to be on the mound and I get to compete.
Yeah. I think you need to just make a standard copy of this book for everybody to, you know, help us live our lives, man. It sounds detailed. That's awesome.
I probably should have a better schedule too when it comes to, you know, the rest of my life, but I'm working on it. Like, for example, like my podcast, like, I'm actually proud of myself because I'm already done and have everything prepared for tomorrow morning. When usually it's Sunday night, I'll get off from work and then I'll have to start working away at it right away. but at least this week, you know, it's already done, ready to go. I have it all the timer set up for the automatic uploads at like 5 a.m. so I don't have to worry about it. And then I just got to post about it tomorrow.
Man, yeah, automatic uploads. We need to merge some technologies here, Brad.
Oh yeah, I'll be more than happy to shoot you what I use. I'm really happy with it.
Yeah, definitely. We'll have a merger episode between the minor league talk and Rum Butter.
Love the crossover.
Yeah, let's do it. Have a crossover. So you get done with your first 2 years at Rollins, and you know, you said all kinds of improvements coming just in those first two. Into your junior year, talk about that and kind of how you noticed your game develop as you became an upperclassman, and you know, how that shifted to the thought of, I really want to do this at the next level.
Yeah. Well, going into my sophomore year, I started realizing more and more that like the draft is more and more of an opportunity that was something that was realistic for me. My freshman year, like, we had scouts around because, like I said, the kid Chris Corbett was a huge component and was an amazing guy, an amazing player. So scouts were already coming around, and then I had heard that like some guys had written my name down, and I was like, holy shit. Someone wrote my name down. I was like, oh my God. But actually, I'm doing it again. I'm taking another step back. But probably, you know, going into my sophomore year when I was – I played out in the Hamptons Collegiate League. And that was – that experience alone probably did more for my pro career than most of my time at Rollins. I remember just, like, getting out there and being – and feeling so overwhelmed with insecurities because I was a D2 guy, that I felt like I had to prove so much to not only myself, but to my teammates too, because they were all D1 guys. And I would tell them, they like, we would all get to know each other. Like, hey man, what's your name? They go, I'm Brad. I go to Rollins College. They go, you go where? I was like, yeah, exactly. Don't worry about it. And so, like, no one – I feel like not a lot of guys give me credit, which I don't blame them for. Like, I never even heard of Rollins until they offered me either. But I went through that summer, and I remember we had an all-star game coming up, and I was like, oh, like, that'd be really cool to play in it. And I look at my coach. I go, Coach, you think I'm going to play in it? He goes, Brad, you're leading the league in strikeouts, ERA, and wins. You're going to start in it. I was like, oh, all right. I didn't even realize.
That's a humble question, man. You got those numbers.
I really didn't know. Like, I wasn't like trying to draw attention to it. I actually like didn't even realize. I was like, oh, huh. I guess I am. All right, cool. So yeah, I went to this. We go to this All-Star game with I drive a couple of my buddies out there, and they were on the team with me. And I just was like. We get there, and I'm thinking, it's the Hamptons Collegiate League, like, all-star game. Like, this will be fun. And we get there, and, like, there's, like, scouts. And we're like, whoa. We're like, what's going on? And then all of a sudden, like, 10 scouts were there, and then 15 scouts, and then 20. And it felt like 35 scouts, 40 scouts were there by the end of the, like, by the time the game got going. We were like, holy crap, what's going on? In that game alone, we had the guys that got drafted. It was – me, Jamie Gallison, JoJo Gray, who's about to make the big leagues with the Dodgers. Who else? I'm forgetting his name. John Rooney. And then there's a prospect with the Richie Palacios, prospect with the Indians. Reese Neer. Like, there's a laundry list of guys that were playing in a game, which is like crazy to look back on now. But that. We're hanging out waiting for the beginning of the game to start, and I'm kind of like playing catch off to the side, like just kind of goofing around talking to some of the other players. And all of a sudden I see my middle school gym coach in the stands. I'm like, what the hell is this guy doing here? I'm like, what are you doing? I walk up and I'm like, Plunkett, like, what are you doing here, man? He goes, oh, I'm a scout for the White Sox. And I was like, what? And he's like, yeah, dude, we've been following you. You've been tearing it up this summer. I'm like, what? And he's like, yeah, like, we think you're going to get drafted. I was like, and that was the first time in my entire life that it started. The way I like to phrase it on my podcast is that it stopped being if I get drafted, it became a when I get drafted. Like, and all of a sudden the flip had switched, and I was like, oh my God, like, this is something I could really do. So I finished out that summer. I had a great year. I go back to Rollins my sophomore year. I started developing more of this routine with my coach, and I come out of that, and I was really happy with it. And coming into my junior year, I was kind of had this mindset of like, all right, I'm the guy. Like, we need to win every time we pitch. We need to do as well. Like, if I'm on the mound, there's no excuse. Like, and it has to be a W. And I have to go out there and have a 2 ERA. I got to have even more strikeouts than I had last year. I got to do this. I got to do that. And I put all of the pressure in the world on me. And it did nothing but hurt myself. And I regret it a lot now. And I think I know how to deal with pressure better because of it. But looking back, like, I really did not do myself any favors by, you know, having all that pressure on me.
What changed? How did you flip that switch back to the old Brad Case?
Before, like, you're talking about the switch of, like, if to when?
Yeah, how did you get back, you know, how did you unpsych yourself out, I guess? How did you, you know, just simplify things, hit the reset button, and, you know, get back to the Brad Case from that sophomore year? Take the pressure off, I guess.
That whole junior year, I never really got back to it. We had some stuff happen internally with our team that was just really hard to deal with. And it kind of got to the point where the whole team, we were all kind of on the same page of like, let's just move through this year and try to make the most of it as we can. Cause there were some tough things that happened.
Yeah.
But I would say that, you know, the craziest thing is about that team is that we lost, I think, 19 games in a row in a 50 game season.
Wow.
And from that team alone, I think, I want to say 6 guys went on to play professional baseball. Man. And at my time overall at Rollins, I think we have 8 guys that went on to play professional baseball. Like we had talented players, but we just never were able to put it together on the field, which was a real shame. But now we got guys, like I said, Corbett was drafted by the Giants. One of my best friends, Brian Auerbach, was signed as a free agent with the Phillies. Some of my other best friends, Anthony Gervados plays indie ball. Whit Drennan plays for the Astros. Cameron Ank plays for the Rockies. Garrett Leonard plays with me on the Pirates. Jimmy Robbins plays with the Blue Jays. Like, there's a just crazy list of guys that, like, we all came out of there and we all played together, but we were never able to put it together on the field, which kind of stunk. But like I said, we tried to move through that year the best we could, and then the draft came around, and then once the draft happened, I tried to put everything behind me, and I just tried to start focusing on the future.
Let's talk about that future. Talk about the draft night and just what that experience is like. We've heard, you know, everybody kind of describe it differently, but for you, what was that moment like? It's something that, you know, I can't imagine.
It sucked. I mean, no, don't get me wrong. It's a lot. It's really cool to get drafted, get your name called.
Yeah.
But the week leading up to it, like, I didn't sleep. I didn't eat. Like, I felt terrible. I was a nervous wreck. And I think that was part of the whole, like, putting too much pressure on myself. I still had not, like, kind of moved out of that. Because, like, in my own eyes, at least, I became the kid that's supposed to get drafted. And there's plenty of guys that are from my area that were really good, or they said they were really good and said they were going to get drafted, but never did get drafted. And I had a lot of fear that I was going to become another one of those guys. So when I got home, actually, I was giving my dad a lot of crap for this, because he was like, yeah, like, Brad's going to get drafted. And so I'm saying this to people. And I was like, Dad, like, shut up. And I was like, dude, like, you can't be saying that to people. I got to the point where a couple of people were like, Brad, we should hang out. I'm like, dude, we haven't hung out since, man, like, 6th grade. I'm like, no, we're not. I was like, sure, I'll see you around. But, you know, I just – the draft week is moving along. And my agent's like, yeah, maybe – day 2 something happens, but you're probably day 3 guy. I was like, all right, cool, sounds good. So watch day 1, watch day 2, and at this point, after day 2, like, I started getting an idea. I think it was, we pretty much, my family were on the same page, like, okay, it's probably gonna be the Mets are interested. I had gotten interest from a bunch of teams, but overall I had gotten a lot of interest from the Mets, the Pirates, and the Blue Jays. And actually, like, to try to take some stress off, I went to the city to try to, you know, hang out with my friends, just relax a little bit. And I'm out, like, hanging out at a bar, just kind of, like, trying to blow off some steam, relax a little bit. And the Blue Jay scout texts me a dollar amount, and I just spit out my drink. And I'm like, oh, my God. I'm, like, freaking out. I'm like, holy crap. My friends are like, Brad, relax. But, you know, I text my agent, send him all that. And I'm like, please just talk to my agent about this so I can figure that out. But, you know, I get home, and the next day we're, like, hanging out waiting for the draft to start, and the draft starts, and I watch rounds 11 through 14, and I just shut off my laptop, and I'm like, I can't watch this anymore. I was like, I am losing my freaking mind. Like, my family feels how much stress I have, too, because they wanted to have a party. Like, they wanted to have people over waiting for the moment. And I was like, no, we're not doing that. Just because I felt like I was going to be so embarrassed if I had all these people in my house and then ended up not getting drafted. So I just had it, me and my family, and we're all hanging out. We're all waiting for something to happen. I get a phone call, and it's my agent. He goes, hey, Mets want to draft you for X amount of money. And it was less than the amount that me and my agent had talked about. So we were like, I was like, no. I was like, your advice to me before this process started was to stick to my number, and I'm going to stick to my number. So I was like, all right, sounds good. I'll tell them. And I hang up the phone. I go, oh God, what did I do? 10 minutes later, he calls me again. Hey, Pirate's going to meet you at your number. I was like, all right, cool. And all I said all my parents could hear me say on the phone was, all right, cool. So my dad goes, what was that? I go, nothing. And I lean over to my little brother, who's just 2 years younger than me. And I go, Pirates are going to take me with their next pick. He goes, oh, he gets all excited. And I didn't even realize he did it. He took his phone and set it up in the corner to record the moment. So we actually have the moment still, like something we can all like go back and watch, which is really cool. And I'm sitting there and I pull up the laptop and I pull up the live stream again. And I go, Mom, come here. And I point at the screen and my name pops up and they say it on the computer. And she starts jumping up and down and screaming and she's going crazy. And I was just like, I was all happy. My dad came over, gave me a big hug. And then it was a really great moment. But then immediately after I got, oh my God, I got drafted. The thought, it all washed away. And all of a sudden, the only thing that was just painted in my brain was, oh my God, I have so much work to do now if I want to make it to the big leagues.
Yeah, no doubt about it, man. I think most guys maybe take that day, couple days to really celebrate. You're different, Brad. You know, you're a hard worker. You obviously turn the page pretty quick there. But, you know, I got to imagine in that moment when you get the call, when you see that you're getting drafted, just the weight lifted off of your shoulders of thinking, I get to play baseball for a career, you know, no matter how long that is. That's my reality for a little bit. Was that, you know, chip on your shoulder, I guess, you know, fulfilled there when you thought, hey, I was a D2 guy, you know, I didn't know what was in my future in high school. I didn't even think I had a chance. Was that weight just completely lifted in that moment, getting the call from the Pittsburgh Pirates?
Yeah. I mean, just like within that 3-year span of like 2015, I'm graduating high school and I'm like, there's no way I play professional baseball to being drafted. If you told like that senior in high school that was going to happen to him, like I would literally look at you in the face and be like, you're insane. Like there's no way that's happened. But here I am. Like there's honestly still a lot of days even today where I'm like, holy crap, like I'm a professional baseball player. Like, that's so cool. And it's something that a lot of people don't get to say, which is unfortunate. And it's a really cool experience. And there's nothing, I would never trade it. I wouldn't trade it for anything in the world, and it's been a lot of fun so far. But it was pretty cool. Just it still is cool just to think like, yeah, like I play baseball for, I wouldn't call it a living, but I get to play baseball for money.
Yeah, no, man, that's you know, that's the dream. That's what every youth baseball player is trying to get to. You said unfortunate that everybody doesn't get to do it, but I think that just adds to the elite factor of getting to do it and getting to be a part of that. Marty and I tried out for the team past few years, haven't gotten a call back. You know, we're still trying, but
I think they just lost your phone number. I'll see what happens.
Yeah. No, maybe make some calls. I don't know. But yeah, man, it's, you know, that is something that so few people get to do. You get the call, you realize it's going to be with the Pittsburgh Pirates. What was your first reaction to that?
It was cool. Pittsburgh was not really a place that was too much on the forefront of my mind growing up, just being from New York. Like, I don't know. It was always like, I obviously knew what Pittsburgh was, but I never was like thinking about Pittsburgh a lot. The most I think I had ever talked about Pittsburgh was me and my little brother have like this funny running joke of have you ever seen the movie 42?
Oh yeah, man, classic.
Yeah, there's one scene where a guy is all pissed off. He's traded to Pittsburgh and he goes, Pittsburgh? And like me and my brother laugh about it all the time. So when I first got drafted by them, drafted by the Pirates, like my brother would like look at me and just go, Pittsburgh? But it's an awesome city. I've been there twice since being drafted. It's a great spot. It's such a cool town. It's such a cool, like, blue collar, rustic place. The rivers are beautiful. It really is something special. And I am so excited to get there and make that crowd roar like it did back in 2013, that wild card game. I really, like, I'm sure there are guys that say this, and, you know, it's because you're supposed to say it, but dude, like, I really want to freaking get that place rocking it and rolling and make it one of the loudest, scariest places to play in all of Major League Baseball, because I know those fans can bring that energy every single night.
Oh yeah, man. It's that 2013 game. That was just, it was different. Like, that's what's possible in Pittsburgh. It's so fun because the fan base is so, you know, die hard. I feel like,
yeah,
it's really a special place to be. And I think I got some beef with 42 myself. They were playing the Pirates in the game.
Towards the end of the movie. Yeah.
Yeah. And I feel like that wasn't historically accurate. They were trying to make Pittsburgh out to be the bad guy, whatever. you know, it's just, it is because they're at the end of the
game. I don't think they get to really, I don't know. If you look at the history books though, in terms of all that, in terms of that kind of aspect of baseball, like, we are the first team to ever field was it all Spanish? Or was it all black and all black field? But like, we've had some of the great, like, not even just great African American and great Spanish players of the game, just great players of the game. Oh, yeah. And Willie Stargell and Roberto Clemente. Like, we've had some of the, you know. So I think that if that movie's trying to say anything about Pittsburgh, like, Pittsburgh has done more than enough talking to show that, you know, things are good. And I think you get what I mean.
Oh, yeah.
No, with what you were getting at there, Brad, it was the first all-minority lineup.
Yes.
Of African-American players and Hispanic players.
Yeah, I didn't know how to put it exactly, but yeah, thank you.
But yeah, no, there's just no denying the history with the organization, 5 World Series, just everything about it. It's had a bit of a difficult past year in the last 20 years, but some incredible moments throughout that as well with the Andrew McCutchen teams and everything else. And
oh, absolutely.
You know, the future is looking so bright with this club. Talk about the culture that you've kind of been able to witness so far in your time with the organization and just the guys that are part of this program.
Dude, I say this a lot, and I don't know. I always preface with, I don't know if this is the case with every organization because you're in that organization and, like, that's kind of what you see. But, dude, there are some freaking dudes. Like, if things pan out, we are going to be an absolute problem in this league. It's going to be a really fun time to be a Pittsburgh Pirates fan in this next couple of years, whether it's guys like O'Neill Cruz putting balls consistently in the river, or if it's guys like Blake Cederlund and Nick Mears coming out of the bullpen and throwing 102. Or Aaron Shortridge painting corners, or Joe Jakes, or John O'Reilly, or Shea Murray, or, like, the list goes on and on. Like, Mason Martin, it's kind of silly. Like, when you look at all the names and what these guys can do as individuals, I think it's going to be an absolute problem for the rest of the league. And I think the culture itself has been great. We just want to win. Like, the Greensboro team that I was on for the first half of last year, man, oh my God. Like, we went out there and we actually just found every way possible to win. We didn't know if it required a shutout from our pitchers. We didn't know if it required 8 doubles in a row by our fielders. We didn't know if we had to play with gold gloves out there that day, but we knew that there was going to be one way or another that we were going to find a way to win.
You love to hear that, man. And I think that's the culture a lot around the league, but especially in Pittsburgh. And we saw that at the big league level this year. That team had some problems. There's no secret. There's no way around it. They were, you know, down in some spots, but they still battled. They still fought. It was great to see. You personally, talk about your experiences in Greensboro and that first year of getting to the organization and getting to professional baseball. What was that like trying to adjust?
Yeah. So when I first got drafted, I felt, honestly, a little bit of a kind of a cool connection with Pittsburgh for 3 reasons. The first one being that, do you guys remember Matt Selinger? He was a prospect with the Pirates a while ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, me and him were actually friends. We played together in the Hamptons League. When I got drafted by the Pirates, he, like, reached out to me. He was like, dude, can't wait to be your teammate. You're going to love Morgantown. You're going to love all these places. Like, it's a blast. I was pretty excited about that. And then there's a guy in my town named Joe Salmini, who is basically, he's, you know, the guy in your town, he's not the mayor, but he's kind of the mayor of the town.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He's that guy. He was the best. He ran a lot of the baseball organizations around here. I played for him in the past, and he was a Pittsburgh Pirate in the minors for them. Dude, I want to say in the 60s, like it was a long time ago. Yeah. So he was really excited when I was out, when I was drafted. And then probably the coolest part about when I first came there to sign and like check out the locker room and everything and check out the field is that the third baseman for the Pirates, Kyle Moran, me and him actually went to the same high school together.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, we were obviously he was much older than me, but it was still kind of cool being like, oh, wow, like the only other INO prep guy in the league is a Pirate just like me. So I've always felt like that's kind of a cool connection there. Although I've only met Colin once. And if you guys know anything about Colin, he is not exactly a talkative guy.
Yeah, no. That's like one of the like running jokes like on like Pirate Twitter during the season is like anytime they actually catch him like smiling in the dugout, it's a huge deal.
Yeah. The funny thing is like I got that warning too.
Catch him showing emotion, like Twitter just blows up about it.
Yeah, that's funny. That's the thing too, is like my high school coaches told me like, yeah, like when you meet Colin, like he's a quiet guy. And I was like, oh yeah, I'm sure. Okay. Yeah. I gotcha. And you know what I mean? Like usually when you hear someone's a quiet guy, it means that they're more quiet, more reserved. Like, yo, he doesn't talk. Like I love, like, I don't want him to think I'm talking smack about him right now, but he is just stone cold silent. And that's just how he is. And I was like, all right, cool. Didn't know that, but sounds good. But I got to talk to him a little bit more, and he was quiet, but he was a really nice guy. So it's been kind of cool. Every time, like, he's had some hot streaks up with the Pirates, and every time he does that, I don't know, I feel like I love, like, watching him succeed, because then it makes me think, like, you know, if he can go there and succeed in the big league level, like, then I have a chance too.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I mean, he's getting to be, you know, in the organization. Everybody has a chance, and you know, your career is already on its way. Talk about the early goings and kind of maybe your struggles and what you did well and kind of how it's gone so far.
Yeah. I think the best way to start is with how literally how day one started after, you know, I get to Pittsburgh. I got there and signed and I'm all excited. I'm there with the group that the guys that I signed with was Zach Spears, Zach Susie, Aaron Shortridge, Brett Kinnaman and Logan Stolke. And these are all like some of the top round guys. And I was like, what the hell am I doing here? And they're all told that they're going to Morgantown. And I was like, well, I wasn't told I was going anywhere. So I must be going to Morgantown too. And I'm all excited because I like, it's Morgantown, West Virginia. It's a fun college town. I was all excited to be a professional baseball player living there. And I'm all pumped. And all of a sudden we're all in there signing stuff. And then they're like, oh, Brad, you're going to the GCL. And I was like, wait, what? And they're like, yeah, you're going to the rookie ball. I was like, oh, all right. You guys have fun in Morgantown. And I get down to the GCL. And if you guys know anything about the GCL, you know it is one hell of a time down there.
Yeah.
So, you know, I went from thinking I was going to be playing in front of fans and playing just in a fun environment to, you know, waking up every morning at 6 a.m., grab a breakfast and get on the field for 4 days – or, sorry, for 4 hours. And then watching a game after that, it's a tough lifestyle. It's a tough way to play baseball, especially as your first experience in a pro ball. But, you know, there was a long time there where I was like struggling and I wasn't doing well. And I think my ERA got up to like a 7.5 and I was just pissed. And finally I kind of had a conversation with myself one day. I was like, all right, you know what? It's stopping right now. Like I'm going to be better after this. And I went out there, and LB, who is – sorry, Larry Broadway, I tell myself that he's like a good luck charm for me because he got there and I threw like a one-hit shutout right away. And I was like, all right, there we go. This is – I needed to do that. I needed that in me. Then the year kind of progresses along in the summer and I'm just dying that like someone gets moved up somewhere where I can get some room to get out of there. And eventually we trade Shane Boz, who was actually, I got a chance to meet him and he was a fantastic guy. And it's too bad we traded him, but
yeah,
we traded him and I get moved up to take his spot and I was more than ecstatic. And then Larry Broadway is there again, the minor league coordinator. And I throw another one hit shutout in front of him. And I was pumped about that again too. And then, you know, I pitch one more game and then the season's over in Bristol. And I'm like, all right, sweet, good. Threw 145 innings this year. My arm's killing me. Time to hang it up for the year. I'm calling that a success. And then my manager calls me in, Miguel Perez. He's like, hey, Brad, you're actually going to Morgantown now. I was like, God damn it. And I was like, all right, cool. Sounds good. So I jump on the plane and I fly up there and I go out there. And I it was kind of cool, like running into all the guys I had met back in June, signing in Pittsburgh. I got to run up, I had to get to catch up to them eventually up in Morgantown. And I pitched there one game and I pitched a good game there too. So I was happy with it. Yeah, that was – it was kind of the first – it was an interesting first experience in a pro ball because, like I said, like it was 150 innings my first year between college and playing for the Pirates. So it was a lot on my arm, but I was really happy with how it ended just because, you know, I got not only one chance to get promoted and improve myself, I got two chances to get promoted and improve myself. So I felt like I put myself in a really good position with the entire organization and show them that, like, wherever you guys put me, like, I'm going to find a way to succeed. I'm going to find a way to accomplish what you guys need me to do. So then going into the next year, I kind of assumed that I was going to go back to Morgantown just because I got moved there so late, and I got and I'm a little bit of a lower round because we had a lot of starting pitching ahead of me. So I kind of assumed that I was going to be kind of pushed back, but you know, I busted my butt in spring training. I did everything they needed me to do. And I showed them that I was willing to, you know, put in all the little details of hard work to, you know, to get there. So then, yeah, when it came down to it, I made that team. I made the Greensboro team at the gate, which I was a little surprised, honestly. But once I did it, I was ecstatic. I got there and I knew that in order to keep on going and keep me moving up, I had to go out there, not only pitch as well as I could pitch every time, not only, you know, do the, all the work between during those 4 days in between each start, but I kind of, you know, I wanted to create that winning culture because I knew, like, yeah, it's great if I make it to Pittsburgh, but if I get to Pittsburgh and, like, we're not winning, like, that's not going to be any fun. Like I said, like, we didn't win in college. We won in high school. We were pretty good in high school, and that was a blast to be a part of, but we didn't win in college, and that wasn't really fun. So I feel like getting to Greensboro and helping create that winning culture as much as I could was going to be almost as important as what I did on the field too.
Definitely, man. That's great to hear because, you know, winning culture, when, you know, winners win at the end of the day, and having that winning culture throughout the minor league system is huge for the future of this team in a small market. You know, of course, it's even harder to win. So hearing that is great. We'll talk about kind of how the grind compares at that level to what it was in college, you know, the step up from college ball to the professional level. Was it a severe change? We, you know, Bly Madris was telling us that it really wasn't even that big of a deal just because of how intense college baseball can be at times. For you, was it a big switch up? I know you said you had to pitch like 150 innings.
Yeah. I think it's a little different for position guys versus pitchers. Cause like I said, like, position guys got to make sure they're ready every single day. Yeah. And outfielders especially, like those guys, if those guys have a day where they're playing against someone like me and they got to chase down some deep fly balls, man, they're going to have a long day out there making some sprints. It's just different. I thought, honestly, I enjoy pro ball immensely more because I don't have to worry about 3, 4, or 5 other classes going on. I don't really have to worry about social life. Like, obviously I still want to be social, but like when you're playing pro ball, like your life is wake up, hang out, eat some eggs, play some video games, go to the field, hang out some more, get your work in, do other things you got to do, shag BP, and then just watch a baseball game. And for me, I really do pride myself. And when I say this, like, I'm obsessed with baseball. Like, I know, like, history back and forth. Like, I love baseball. I'll watch it all day long. And, you know, just to be around that all the time, like, it did not bother me at all. Like, it made me really happy. And it's a blast. Like, there's really nothing more to it. It's just like you wake up and just baseball is your job. You wake up, you get your stuff done, you watch a baseball game, and you go to bed and you just do it all again the next day. And honestly, it was a really great time, and it sucks that I've only gotten the chance to do that for one full year so far.
Yeah, man, that's the lifestyle. Like, oh, that sounds ideal. If, I think everybody needs to do that for a day. You know, it just sounds paradise for you.
It's like living the dream, I gotta say.
Yeah. It's certainly a good time. There were times though at the end of the year, you know, when I've heard the phrase August angries. When you get to the end of the year and you're kind of tired, it's just like it gets a little numbing at sometimes, but for most of the year, like it's an absolute blast. It's an absolute great time. But I would do it. I would freaking give anything to be able to make sure that we can play the full year next year.
Yeah, no kidding, man. It was such a just horrendous year for sports, for life, for everything. You know, minor league baseball players really got the shortest end of the stick in the baseball world. What was it like for you personally this year? The challenges and just dealing with everything going on.
So I'll talk. There's two things I'll kind of talk about right here. The first is it really, I really hate to like kind of criticize and kind of point any fingers, but like it really did suck to not kind of have any guidance as to what was going on. Because like I've got home, I get in the beginning, no one really had answers, but like I got home and I was like, all right, we're playing. I was like, 2 weeks we're gonna be down there. Like I'm gonna keep working this entire time. And I felt like I said that for like 4 or 5 months, where I just was convinced that we were going to play. And I kind of went a little crazy with it. But like, there wasn't a ton of guidance, which really irked me. Because I would have loved just the, hey, like, okay, you can like hit the brakes a little bit, like just kind of hang out. Like, we don't know what's happening. Because I was really convinced, like, I had to stay ready. So I busted my butt the whole time. And then I was up here in New York actually, and I was just a couple miles from New Rochelle, New York, which is one of the hottest spots, which one of the biggest breakouts in the country. So like I was kind of nervous to come home at first at all. But you know, I get here and all the gyms were completely shut down. I think the gyms opened up again. It's like September. So between March and September, I originally started with a log in my garage that weighed 50 pounds. I'm not kidding. I would literally just do squats and lunges and whatever I could. The Pirates would send us like body workouts to do, and I would do that on top with like the weights that I could find. And then I was very fortunate that one of our good family friends works at a military base, and they had a full weight room, and he was kind of able to sneak in there and grab some stuff for me, so I was able to, you know, work out still for a little bit.
That's nice, yeah.
So I got to do that. And then there's actually two guys, two brothers, that you're gonna definitely be hearing their names in a couple years, whether it's the minor league circuit or the major league circuit. Jack Keenan, he's a left-handed pitcher at Marist College, and then Jimmy Keenan, his little brother, is this kid is 16 years old, and he is bigger than me,
Oh,
and
great.
he's not height-wise, but like strong-wise, like he is a absolute unit. And he was catching bullpens for me and for like three other pro guys the entire time.
Oh, man.
Yeah, just an overall like one of the greatest kids. Like, he's just one of those guys. He's got a 99 average in every class, and he's ginormous, and he can hit the ball over the fence as a sophomore in high school. Like, he is something else. So
Man.
I pretty basically trained with him like every single day for months. I just kept working at it, and you know, and then that turned into, oh, we found a place to work out, and we're working out in parking lots, and we were working out like behind stores, and I was throwing bullpens behind a pizza place at one point. Like, I found anything and everything I could to, you know, make sure I kept going. It was tough, but you know, it was a good year because I at least got to learn a lot about baseball, a lot about how bodies move, and a lot about just the more of the science behind like how we get our body into the right positions and why guys throw hard versus other guys, and little keys and tricks along the way.
Yeah, that's. I mean, you know, it sounds like you took the opportunity to learn and to grow. I feel like there were some cases where people just, you know, it didn't get much done and used it in the wrong ways. You used it as a way to build. When did the, I guess, guidance start to come back? When did they begin to tell you know, what direction things were going in and where things were going to end up?
It was beginning to hit. I think it was, I want to say like the end of June is when I started getting more of an idea, like, okay, this is what we're doing. And then they announced like the alternate training site, and I was like, okay, maybe I have a chance at that. But I knew that was going to be kind of a long shot. And then I got a small, tiny injury. And I knew that kind of knocked me out of any kind of running if I was going to be close to being called to go, you know, work out in Altoona with the alternate site. Mm-hmm. So I once that happened, I was kind of like, all right, year's probably over. And then they were like, no, we still want you to get healthy. We don't know what's going to happen in the fall. So I was like, all right, sounds good. Got ready again. And then I was hoping that I'd either get called down to Instructs, or find a spot over in like the Mexican League, Dominican League, Puerto Rican League, Australian League, anywhere. But after some looking, wasn't able to lock down anything. So I ended up just calling it a year and then just getting into off season lifting mode.
Yeah. This freed up some time though, Brad. You, like I mentioned at the top of the show, you're a fellow podcaster. Over quarantine, you started a podcast of your own. Talk about that and where that's taking you.
Yeah. It's called The Minor League Take. Couldn't think of a better name, so I went with that. I knew for a long time that there's some guys that I play with that have just like incredible stories. Like Joe Jakes was on the podcast. He's got an insane story. I really encourage you to check out that. But the thing that I want to highlight more than anything was that it doesn't really matter how you start, who you are, where you're from, or anything like that. Like you can find a way to play this game. Pat Dorian's another crazy story that I've really encouraged to check out too. It's a matter of, you know, getting this information to kids that, you know, are interested in playing at the next level. It's also going to be for parents that are trying to help their kids out too. It can be for even the normal person that's like, hey, like I like the Pirates or I like these prospects. Let's check out this. Because obviously I'm going to be able to get a lot of Pirates guys on because I have such a close connection with these guys.
Yeah.
But I've got guys from other organizations as well. But it's been a lot of fun. And I think it's been a good opportunity too, to understand how, kind of marketing works and how other things work in that kind of aspect. I've made a total of like $3 so far in my podcast. So we're doing real well on ad sales.
Yeah, it's a real money making industry now.
Yeah. But it's been fun doing that. And then I also kind of asked for some advice from some of the more successful people that I know in my life. And I told them about this and they're like, it doesn't matter if you're necessarily going to be crazy successful. Like obviously, best case scenario, this thing blows up and you – like are doing this once a week and like you're making money doing it and you're having cool guests come on and you are making these great videos. But more importantly, it's good that you can show that you're willing to do this work so that one day if I do need to go into an office and get a job, I can show them this and be like, look, this is this project that I built from nothing. And from that, like I'm showing you, like, maybe I don't know how to make this successful, but I'm showing you that I'm willing to work at it and do what the work and do the things that I have to do to try to make this thing work. And try to bring it, you know, to the level that I want it to be at.
Yeah, that's just such an awesome thing to have, man. You know, whether your career goes 25, 30 years and you get it.
Yeah, whether if I play till I'm 40, awesome.
Yeah, exactly.
If I don't, I gotta have to find something else that I gotta be able to do. So.
Oh, yeah. You know, regardless, you got the podcast Renaissance, man. You're still playing the game right now. Getting back into it this off season. Talk about how it's gone so far and, you know, kind of what you've been doing to really get back into the game, prepare for this spring.
Yeah. So I moved, into an apartment with a couple of friends. And that was a blast this off season. And I went and got a job and was working as a bartender. But as you know, Governor Cuomo told us that we have to lock down the city again. So I'm back home with my parents. Cause I gotta go for my job. So I was like, well, I can't really stay here and keep training. So, I moved back home and now I'm going to start training at a local place by me for a couple weeks. And then I'm actually in the process of moving all my stuff down to Jupiter, Florida. So I can start training at the Cressy facility. Do you guys know anything about Cressy?
I haven't heard too much about it.
He's one of the guys. He's one of like the best trainers in all of baseball. He still trains Scherzer and Kluber and Syndergaard and, like the list just goes on and on. If you like, go ahead and look it up. Yeah. Brad Hand, like it's crazy. The list of guys that he has that come in there. So I'm really excited to get down there. I trained remotely with him in 2018 going into 19. And that was a great, I enjoyed just doing that. But this year I'm going to be at the facility all the time. And I'm mostly doing this because I know that, especially with this year, as many questions as we have, like if I end up spending 4 or 5 months going to this facility every day with major leaguers around me, like I know that I'm going to get better.
Oh yeah.
Like whether it's osmosis of just pure talent transferring to me or talking to these guys and learning more about the game, like I know that I'm going to get better at baseball. And I'm trying to set up a situation right now where I can be as successful as possible. And I'm just really excited to get down there and, you know, start getting after it and enjoy it and, you know, understand more and more. Because as much as I love New York, it's not a great environment to train for baseball in January, February.
I can imagine. Yeah, probably a little chilly up there.
Yeah, a little cold, yeah. I was really excited to start throwing last week, and then it snowed a foot and a half, and I was like, oh, maybe I should wait.
Snow baseball, it's a lot of fun. That's why we play these games in the summer, you know, a little different. But that's going to be a great opportunity to keep getting better as you prepare for this spring. Where do you hope to be at the end of spring training, once you get through it all, assuming we have, you know, relatively normal spring training and everything else, where do you want to be come, you know, really the end of February into March?
So I was told at the beginning of spring training last year that I had a good chance of making a double-A team. And then kind of looking at like who, like you kind of, I think every player does this where they kind of start looking ahead at like who's playing where, what position, starters, relievers, all that kind of stuff. I kind of did the math and I was like, all right, it looks like I'm like a spot or two away from being in that Altoona rotation. And then after some cuts were made, I was like, oh, wow. Like, I guess I am in that Altoona rotation once, you know, now that I'm looking at it. So I think last year I was, you know, I was either going to get there at some point or I was going to start there. And I was more than excited to do that. Because I've heard nothing but great things about Altoona. I've heard about how much of a baseball town it is and about how much the fans there really enjoy it. So,
yeah, I was... speak from experience, I lived in Altoona for 4 years. It's a sneaky good baseball town. Well, one thing I always tell people, we talked about this with Bly when he was on. I think one thing that makes the Altoona fan base so good is most of the people who live in Altoona are also Pirate fans. Because it's only, you know, hour and a half, 2 hours away from Pittsburgh. So I think that makes the town get like super invested into their baseball team because it's like, okay, you watch these guys now playing in Altoona, you know, a year or two or three down the road, they're going to be playing for their favorite major league team as well.
They're going to be trading out that the Altoona Curve hat for that black and gold.
Town to really invest in the team.
Yeah, that is probably one of the cooler things. One of my best experiences so far with fans has been in Greensboro, which is just a sick fan base. If you guys ever get a chance to go watch some games there, I really encourage you because we were getting like 5,000-6,000 a night. But I've heard Altoona is like that. But now hearing, you know, obviously putting the math together that they're all actual Pittsburgh Pirates fans, I'm sure it's an even better environment because those fans are probably even more jacked up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that ballpark in Greensboro is sweet too. Altoona as well. Really, all the way up. It's world-class facility, you know. So Altoona is the goal for this upcoming season. Let's talk even further. What do you want to look back on at the end of your career as far as the impact goes and the success? You know, what kind of impact do you really want to leave?
I think I want to do the things like I want to be the best pitcher I can be. I want to be the best teammate I can be. And I want to bring the most World Series possible back to Pittsburgh. Because that is ultimately like one of the things that withstand the test of time. It's a weird thing that I do, but like I try to build on it every year. I can name every World Series winner all the way back to like 1984. Just for fun. Like I just do it just for fun, but like I want to try to build farther back. But those are always the things that withstand the test of time. Because like the 1979 championship, like, it sits one of the lobbies at PNC Park. And, you know, it's too bad that's the last time we won it. So to be able to bring more of those to Pittsburgh, be able to bring up more banners that are going to stand there, like those banners are going to stay there for the rest of time until baseball itself stops, which is never going to happen because this is the best sport in the world.
Oh yeah.
So, you know, be able to bring back World Series would be really great, but I think more importantly, I think that as a baseball player, my job more than anything is to be an ambassador for the game and to try to bring as many people into our sport as possible. I try to, I have it written down in that famous black notebook I told you about. One of the things I wrote down in that book is that, being in the field is about literally everybody else besides you. It means not only am I there for my teammates, I'm there for like the people that are, you know, working the concession. I'm there for the owner. I'm there for the people in the front office that make the decisions. I'm there for all those things. But above all, I'm there for the fans, because without the fans, there's like, this isn't a game. Like, this is just something that you can do with your friends on the weekend. Like, without the fans, you're not a professional. It doesn't mean anything. Like, I've played in empty stadiums. It's really not fun. It's fun still play because you're playing baseball, but it's nothing to the same effect. Having fans in the stadium, having those people scream your name and having them cheer you on, it's probably the coolest thing in the entire world that you can experience. So, if I can be a Pittsburgh Pirate and make that, if I can make PNC Park an absolute great time, an absolute blast, something that like people forever are going to have memories of, not even necessarily me playing, but just, you know, having a good time. If I can do that, then I'll know that my career was a success at the end of the day.
And yeah, that's awesome goals. Great story, Brad. Thanks so much for coming on with us tonight. It's been truly a pleasure getting to talk to you tonight and sharing all that with us.
Yeah, guys, it was my pleasure too. This has been awesome. It's always great to talk to not only, you know, just guys that report on the game, but guys that are Pittsburgh Pirates fans too.
Oh, definitely, man. Brad Case, one of the most humble guys you'll meet. Go check out his podcast, The Minor League Talk. Check out his Twitter, his Instagram as well. You can find him at Brad_Queso. Love the username.
Yeah, I got that nickname my very first day at Pro Bowl.
We ordered Mexican food for lunch, and now, like, knowing we were doing this tonight, as I was eating the queso with our Twitter, all I could think about was your Twitter name.
One of the best in the business. Go check it out. Brad_Queso. That's all the time that we have for this episode of Rum Bunter Radio. Thank you so much for joining us. As always, you can find us on Apple Music, on Spotify, fansided.com/rumbunter. You can hit us up on our social media at Rum Bunter on Twitter. And we have an app as well. Go check it out at the App Store under Rum Bunter. Until next time, my name is Trey Yannity with Marty Lee. This has been a production of Rum Bunter Radio. Let's go, Bucks.